7 other men standing in front of me. We all gather together like idiots and discuss what we're going to do during this match. We know what the finish is. That's how a match ends. And then we all get to have a conversation, more like a bargaining, of what we are going to do to each other.
I am lying to myself, and I can't lie to myself anymore. I cannot be with a liar.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hinken. And this week on the podcast, Big Little Lies.
But this is more like the first season of Big Little Lies, not the second.
Got it. Okay. Two stories about the pleasure and pain of being conned.
Before we get started with today's stories, we want to thank Park School of Baltimore, an independent, co-ed, non-sectarian school in North Baltimore. So this first story is told by Tim German. And he's an actor, he's an improviser, he's a comedian, playwright. But for the purposes of this story, what you need to know is that he is a professional wrestler. And I happen to know a bit about professional wrestling because
your husband.
I happen to be married to somebody who is deep into it for a while.
Yeah.
And I've been to several, more than several, live wrestling events, which I will say are super fun.
Yeah, that's
super, really fun.
It's so deeply uncomfortable.
Like if you're rolling your eyes right now, I'm just going to tell you it's like opera.
Okay.
It's broad, sure. Big themes, big emotions.
Yep.
But you may not know this, but there's a whole world of indie wrestling. So it's not just WWE. There's all this other stuff going on too. And there's like a whole kind of hierarchy of how you have to try to get up to the big time, if that's in fact what you want to do. Actually, there's so much indie wrestling now that Tim is even sure that that's what his goal is.
Yeah.
So this is a story about an experience Tim had as a new professional wrestler. And you're going to learn a lot about professional wrestling, and then you're going to thank us. So listen up.
When I first started in professional wrestling, the first person who ever gave me my first bump, that's what we call it when you fall down, bump, shook my hand and told me that, welcome to the Brotherhood, brother. You're in the business now, and it's not the fighting business, it's the protection business. In professional wrestling, we're in the protection business. We protect each other, we protect the legitimacy of the art form, we protect the audience's suspension of disbelief. That's what we do, we're in the protection business. Every time you go into a locker room, you shake each other's hands as a show of respect because if something goes wrong, you could die. It's happened way more than it should. We also protect our audience, like I said, their suspension of disbelief. We work so that our art form feels legitimate, feels engaging, so that they never get distracted and go, ugh, fake, phony. That's what we do. But they also protect us as well. A couple of weeks ago, I had a show. That's what we just call them, wrestling shows. Shows are comprised of matches. I had a match on said show, an 8-man tag. I went in, 7 other men standing in front of me. We all gather together like idiots and discuss what we're going to do during this match. We know what the finish is. That's how a match ends. And then we all get to have a conversation, more like a bargaining, of what we are going to do to each other. The ways we are going to inflict violence upon each other. That is the conversation that we have. At one point in this conversation, we realize that we're not color-coded, so we all go back to our work bags. That's the bags that comprise all of our shiny costuming, our gear, and we decide to get color-coded, except at one point, half of us who are on one half of the team and then another half of us on the other half of the team have a weird discussion. So we all come back, and half of one team is wearing dark clothing, and half of one team is wearing white clothing, and vice versa, and then we all go, okay, just... You guys wear light, you guys wear dark. So my team ended up wearing dark clothing. The other team ended up wearing light clothing. That's important because what happens next? Bobby Body Slam is a good friend of mine. He's a young kid. He's a great heel. A heel is what is called a bad guy. That's what we call bad guys. Good guys, baby faces. Bad guys, heels. He's on the opposing team from me. Bobby is great. He's young. He's very dumb. He's wonderful. at one point, we're in the middle of our match, and, you know, I'm just engaged in trying to make this look good because it's being recorded. People film these things. I'm taking bumps. I'm taking lines. I'm doing head scissors takedowns, literally flipping myself up, putting my legs around somebody's head, and then whipping myself over, and then they flip forward, land on their back, jumping, flying, bouncing off of ropes, all of the things that you have been accustomed to knowing about professional wrestling lightly. At one point, I get bipped off of the corner. That bip is basically when somebody bips you off of the corner. Fall down, as does the rest of my team, so we only have one individual in there. That's important to the end of it, because I'm on the corner. I'm on the ground speaking with one of my teammates because we have a lot of time. We can kill it. Talking. Hey. He goes, come here. And when I wrestle, I don't wear my glasses. He says, did you see that? I say, no, obviously. And I say, what are you talking about? And he says, did you see that? I say, what? He says, look at Bobby. And I say, what are you talking about? He says, look at Bobby. And I look at Bobby and I can't see anything. And he says, man, I think that Bobby shit himself. Now, you'll remember that Bobby's team is the team that's wearing the light clothing. So on the back of Bobby's tights, he was wearing a wonderful white singlet, is a gigantic streak of defecate. And Lord, it is obvious to everyone. At some point, I go back and think about the match, and I do realize that at one point I saw the rest of his team going. So they saw it before I did. Our match ends successfully. We get the end result that we wanted to. No one's dead. So we all go into the back. Storyline, the story we were trying to tell, goes well. Bobby shoots right past all of us, flies straight into the back to never be seen again for the rest of the night. I never talked to him about it. One thing that you'll note, one thing that you should learn from this experience is that Twitter, when it involves wrestling, is very communicative. We all talk. Everybody sees everything that happens. It's something that I've gotten used to. I fall down during a match. Someone tweets me, hey, I saw you fall down, idiot, and it hurts. But we all talk. Nobody talks about Bobby. No, for real, nobody, not a single thing is said about Bobby possibly shitting himself for legitimately maybe 2-3 weeks. And I expect it. I'm like, man, the thing that they're going to do, they're going to destroy him. They're going to call him shit pants. They're going to call him poop pants Bobby. They're going to call him doo-doo Bob. But they don't. I actually figure after a couple of weeks that Bobby probably didn't even notice it. Or he did, and nobody else did in the audience. It was just us because we're workers and we're paying attention to everything else that's going on except for the wrestling match. Until one day I work with him on another show, and we're tagging this time. He and I, we're both being heels, we're both being bad guys, so we get to work together. And I'm nervous, man, because this is my first time ever at this particular promotion, this particular show. And I'm like, man, Bob, I cannot get out of my head for this one, man. I'm really, really nervous. And he says, hey, man, this show can't go worse than the time that I shit myself. Our music hits and we go straight out. The thing that's the most amazing, like I said, is we're in the protection business. I protect you when we wrestle. I protect the audience when we wrestle. And obviously, sometimes, the audience protects us. Thank you.
All right. So I did learn a lot.
Yeah. About the whole, like, protection business and mm-hmm. the whole, and there's this also this thing called kayfabe, which is like the way in which stuff that happens out of the ring, like on Twitter or whatever, they do use all that to support the illusion that they're creating in the ring,
mm-hmm.
and they do all these sort of extra things about it. It's really cool.
Yeah,
the storytelling. I mean, I actually may have gone on to WWE and see if there are any writing positions available. Because some of the writing is really good, like the storylines of it, the arcs. And
I'm processing a lot right now.
That's good.
That is information I did not know.
Good.
You know, early on when I first had my Abby and Charlie, my kids, when they were young, I desperately wanted to work for Children's Television Workshop, Sesame Street.
What does that have to do with professional wrestling?
I'm just like a similar thing, like where I just thought that would be a great job for me. Because of my background doing, you know, early childhood.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
I'm just trying to find
what I was saying was more interesting
with you because I'm so surprised.
You don't like, you're really surprised. But anyway, you should know by now.
I'm
always going to surprise
you so that I don't make eye contact with you.
I'm always
going
to surprise you. So anyway, you can follow Tim German at Electric O'Neill because Eel O'Neill is his stage. Or not his stage name. It's his persona, his wrestling persona for now. Mm-hmm. You can follow him on Twitter. Okay. Before we move on to the next Big Little Lies story, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine, which only prints the truth, baltimoremagazine.com, and also on the newsstand every month. And we want to thank Golden West, which is on the Avenue in Hamden. Delicious food, fun bar, cool events, special event nights.
I go there to figure out what's in style clothing-wise.
Yeah. And haircuts.
Yep. Haircuts, clothing, frames. That's where you go.
Oh, eyeglass frames.
Eyeglass frames. Sometimes not eyeglasses, but mostly eyeglasses because everyone wears them.
Okay.
Second storyteller.
Yeah. So this next storyteller, Hillary Sigismondi. That's how she said it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was actually both of these stories were told at a show that we just did or that we did back in July.
Such a good show.
That was called Truth and Lies. And it was stories. So it was dupe stories. And then it was magic acts.
The magic was insane.
For weeks afterward, people kept asking me how this magic was done, because there was one case where someone read someone's mind.
It was a mentalist.
And it was really cool.
And I believe it.
You believe that he read
her
mind?
Yes, I believe that either he time traveled or that he read her mind. I more believe that he time traveled.
Okay.
So he had lived that moment again. That's my theory.
So he left the stage and entered another dimension and then returned.
Yes.
All before our very eyes.
Yep.
Cool. Well, that's Jessica's take on it. But this story Hillary shared was about sort of what it's like to have to deal with lies and with being conned in your life. So when you watch magic, like you give permission to be conned. Although Jessica believes that it was time travel, most people would realize that like whatever magic happens is it's not really magic.
What?
It's mastery, but you don't know how it works, so it feels magical.
No,
so
I
it's
know
wonder
that it's time
it's
travel.
Time travel. So this is a really different case that Hillary's sharing about. So take a listen.
It was Labor Day weekend, 2014, and I had just ended a serious 4-year relationship, and I was feeling really empowered. I was going to take some time off from relationships, and I was really excited about it. So I'm sitting up at the bar at Mick O'Shea's Pub, downtown Baltimore, and I'm waiting for my friend Mary Jo to show up. And, of course, what happens? I meet a man, Charles. Charles was in town from Ohio for the Ohio State football game. And of course, we start talking smack about football. And next thing you know, my friend Mary Jo shows up. We spend the rest of the night carrying on, laughing and having a great time. So Charles is sharing about his 6 adult children and how much he loves being a father. And he talks about his own dad and how abusive he was. And he talks about the fact that he never felt like his mother loved him. And I'm thinking, man, this guy is so open and honest and vulnerable. So I tell him about the fact that I go to this new church. And I tell him I'm a little bit weird to tell him that because of what he might think of me. But I'm like, I have to be honest about who I am. And I warn him. I'm like, you are never going to meet somebody as honest as me. So anyway, we have a great time. And within 2 months, he moves to Baltimore. Right down the street in Hamilton, and by summer, he's moved in. And I am happier than I've ever been in my life. We join Couples Coaching Couples, which is this organization of couples that support each other in having extraordinary relationships. Our summer is filled with dancing, pool parties, Oriole games. I'm having the time of my life. On his own, he decides he's going to get into counseling. My brother Doug, who loves to come up with nicknames for my boyfriends, can't find anything wrong with him. Calls him Mr. Wonderful. I could not wait to marry this man. And After waiting and waiting for his divorce papers to show up, we finally give up and say, we're getting married now. And we go to the Baltimore County Courthouse, get married, September 5th, 2015. So a month later, I'm lying up in my bed on a Friday afternoon waiting for Charles to come home because we were heading out for Bethany Beach with our friends Sue and Steve. And I get a private message from his ex-wife, Sherry. And the message says, Hillary, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but Charles and I are still married. He knows darn well we never got a divorce. I'm like stunned. I'm like, can I call you? And I do. And she proceeds to tell me that Charles is a liar and has not, his kids actually don't want to have anything to do with him because of it. And she's like, look, he's really charming, but you need to run. I immediately call my friend Amy. She says, you need to go now. I start pacing in my bedroom. I'm crying. I'm like, what the fuck? Are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, I can't believe this, right? So now I have to tell you, full self-disclosure, I knew at this point I'd caught Charles in a couple of lies. He had two ex-wives, not one. And he was only the biological father of three of his children, not all six. So Charles comes home. I confront him. I don't yell or scream. Instead, I open my arms, and he cries as I hold him, and he apologizes and says that I'd be better off without him in my life. So we call his therapist together, sitting on the back porch, on the back porch steps. And he admits that he knew that he was not divorced, but he said he didn't want to let me down. And I'm like, oh, now I know why we never got those divorce papers in the mail, right? So we go to the beach. I'm like, we're going to the beach. My friends, we don't say a word, which feels like a huge lie, right? They don't have a clue. And on the way back from the beach in our car, we have a conversation with our relationship coaches, and we decide we're going to fight for our relationship. I decide I love Charles too much to let him go. So I get an annulment, and we're actually a little, like, the thing is, like, I can stay in a relationship with him, but I can't be in a sham marriage, right? So it's a lie. So we do get this annulment, and I was really pissed because it cost me $1,500, which anybody knows me, that's a big deal for me, money issues. So we even, when we go to the courthouse, we're like nervous that he's going to get arrested because it's actually, he committed a felony. And Charles finally gets his divorce. So aside from my kids and my closest friends and our coaches, everybody thinks we're married still. And I'm thinking, well, you know, we're going to get married eventually or someday. So what's really the point in having to tell everybody, right? But Charles continues to lie. And I continue to hear about lies he's told me. That 401k he bragged about, non-existent. That time he went to Florida to visit his kids, never saw them. So now I'm like, I'm not going to be marrying this guy anytime soon. He has some serious problems. And I'm also, though, I can't lie. I can't walk around and pretend that we're married. So we decide to tell the truth. Charles is a liar. He's a compulsive liar. He is working on it, and I'm sticking with him. So funny. So people are like amazed at our couple. Oh, you're so strong. Your couple is so amazing. You know, Charles is taking responsibility and he's sharing about his struggle with lying and talking about how much he's hurt me and he's being so open and honest and vulnerable, right? And he lies about walking the dog. Yeah. He lies about washing the car, like stupid shit. Like, who cares, right? And so then I'm like, I don't know if I can do this anymore, right? So he's like lying. But he keeps promising he's not going to lie anymore. So by now it's 2018, New Year's Day. And we're actually doing really well. And I'm thinking he hasn't been lying. And we're working on a vision board for our relationship. And we're sitting on the couch and we're cutting out pictures, and he gets a text. And he says, it's from work. I said, who's that? He goes, it's from work. And I look at it, and it's from a friend of ours. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm done. And I tell him, so he moves out. We drop out of couples, coaching couples. I'm really... Finally. But I'm really devastated. I'm devastated. And I tell him that I don't want to have anything, see him for like 2 months. And I don't. And I'm actually doing really great. And I tell him that when I see him 2 months later for coffee. And I also tell him at that time that I was reading this book and there's writing exercises in it for men who are abusive. And by this time, that's what I'm calling it. And he gets the book. And he starts emailing me his responses to the questions. And he's so open and honest and vulnerable. And I miss him. And he is getting hypnosis at this point to try to figure out, like, why does he keep lying, right? And I really miss him. So he moves back in. And right before that, I had this aha moment. I'm like, I got it. Charles can't not lie. If I can just be with that, like, get it. He just can't not lie. I can accept that. Like, I don't have to marry him. I can still be in a relationship with him, right? Okay. So he moves back in, and he is in intensive therapy. He does this thing. He has a rubber band on his wrist, and every time he thinks about lying, he's supposed to snap the rubber band. He's meditating. He is in a men's club, men's group. He's singing in the choir. And I'm hating myself for loving this man. I'm embarrassed. And I don't want to talk to my friends, right? And I'm depressed. And I say I don't know why. So I go to a former therapist. And I'm telling her the story. And as I'm finishing up the story, the tale of Charles, it hits me. I'm like... I know why I'm depressed. I'm lying to myself. I am lying to myself, and I can't lie to myself anymore. I cannot be with a liar. So I come home, and I tell Charles he has to move out. And we both cry, but I'm clear. I love Charles, but I can't lie. Charles loves me. But he can't not lie. And, you know, when I look back at the 4 years that I spent protecting this relationship, I know I did it because I really loved him, like more than I ever loved anybody. And I really thought that love could overcome anything. But it can't.
I would only be
Have you ever
it's
dated?
It's a love story.
Yeah, it's a love story. Have you ever dated anyone that lied to you?
No, but I definitely had a problem with lying too when I was a teenager because I was terrified of my parents and always worried about getting in trouble.
Oh, interesting.
So, and it usually like they say, it ended up worse in the long run, but.
The cover-up is worse than the lie.
It really is.
Well,
what about you?
Yeah, I had a boyfriend who lied a lot. It was really so. I not only did I really just love Hillary's energy. I thought she was just a wonderful woman. I immediately liked her, but I was like, ugh, I totally know how this
feels.
Well,
and there, yeah, and it was like when you first hear like, oh, this guy wasn't divorced and he was lying all the time. You think like, oh, does he have? What's he? Like, how's he trying to game her? What's he getting out of this? And it's like, no, he's sick.
Yeah.
Like, he's sick. And it's, so it ends up being a story that's sad, not about he did you wrong,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
She just, like she said, she thought that loving him would, you know, would be able to heal him.
Right.
But
she realized she was lying to herself.
Oh, gosh. Anyway. We're going to leave you with a couple truths. One is that the Wine Source at 3601 Elm Avenue is a terrific place to visit for all your entertaining and libation
truth.
Needs. That is a truth. Two truths and a lie. No, that's not. This is all truths. Another truth is that we are at stoopstorytelling.com.
Also truth. Third truth. Maureen Harvey is an excellent producer.
She's a beast.
She takes good care of us. And we'll see you next week.
Be truthful.